Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg.
This is Enrico Belmonte.
Hey, Enrico. You know, we were having a discussion yesterday, and one of the thoughts that we didn't dive into at great length, but I thought would make a great podcast episode, is how do you explain complicated subjects to your management team or your peers or, you know, whoever needs to understand, say, a calculation for a reliability estimate or a physics of failure model use and adapting it to your circumstance, or even what I find is just about anything related to statistics, people just kind of back away slowly and try to leave the room kind of thing. I don't know, what's your experience with
it? Yeah, that is about the distance between engineering and the rest of the population, you know. Mm-hmm. So you have two options. Either you want to discuss about engineering topics just with engineers and consider all the other people like they should not deserve this kind of topic.
Well, yeah. I don't know if that's the right way to approach it, but yeah, it's an idea.
Yeah, I think it's like a myopic option, but I've seen a lot of time, yeah, this mm-hmm. kind of approach. Or you try to establish sort of communication way to get to the people that decide or they contribute to decision, you know. And that is about how effective you want to be in a company.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good point. I've run into it, and I kind of made it a joke in too many presentations. As I put up a CDF, a cumulative distribution function, a plot of say a Weibull distribution, right? And it's failures from testing or failures from the field or whatever, and I don't explain the algorithms used to create the regression fed, and I don't explain, you know, all of the data cleaning that we had to do because ones were L's and L's were ones and stuff like that through the data set. But what I found is that I say, here's the story that this tells, and it's, you know, at 5 years, this is saying this line then goes over to the side and it says that, you know, 8% of your products will have failed in 8 years. And if you multiply that probability, that 8% times however many units you're shipping, that's how many field failures you have. You know, so it was, I found that if I stopped at that's the probability of failing, it wasn't a complete story. And so adding, how do you translate that into everyday? Because they knew most of the times the audience I'm working with, the management teams, they had a pretty good idea of how many units they're shipping.
Yeah.
And so they could do that. They could do that math in their head pretty quickly. And I said, now the other piece of information you need to know is what's the cost per return? You know, what does it cost us when somebody calls us up and says it isn't working? And here's a rough estimate. And then they, based on your data, this is kind of the way it works out. And then all of a sudden their eyes get big and go, well, that's a lot of money. You know? But if you just put up a probability plot and say, see, it explains everything. It's
yeah, that's not the way. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so you mentioned one strategy, and that's I think the most important one, which is working with examples. You know, mm-hmm. with easy examples. The more examples you know, the more expert you are.
Yeah, that's a good way to say it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Either
yeah,
that,
yeah.
Or you're just really old.
Yeah. Yeah. But this is the older you are, the more expert you are. I don't know if it's correlated.
Yeah, it's correlated. Yeah, somewhat.
might be.
I don't know what the goodness of fit would be on that, but you know.
yeah. But you know, the experience is a great thing. And I think that the expert that they know that it's really easy to reach what they want to reach by by making some examples. So mm-hmm. therefore, they are used to do that, right?
Yeah.
I think another important strategy or tactic, let's say more than strategy, another important mm-hmm. tactic is the visualization.
Yeah.
And one thing that I like to do is to use the whiteboard instead of like showing screenshot from softwares.
Yeah.
That's definitely way better. So engineers have lost the ability to draw properly. Yeah.
That is true. I remember early in my career, the team I was on all went to a drawing class. And I mean, they had great big sheets of paper up on the wall, and we were taught how to draw a straight line. That was the first lesson. And then, do other kinds of drawings and then capture meeting notes and drawings. And the group I worked in, I mean, we practice that in our own meetings and get togethers and stuff. So I have a long time preference to just get a whiteboard or a piece of paper. What I find it does, and it's a really good idea, Enrico, is it slows me down. This line, I have to say, all right, this line, the vertical axis has this axis, and this is what it is. It's probability of failure, 0 to 1. And this one is time, and I put marks on it and stuff. And other than if you just do a graphic, all that information is there already, and you already know what's there. And so you start talking about the result right away without setting the frame, setting what it is what is this graphic. So I really like that idea of just draw it.
And you have two additional advantages, Fred. So you mentioned it slows down. That's mm-hmm. one advantage. But then you draw just what matters, right?
Yeah.
So you don't draw something that is not important in the discussion. Whereas if you have like a screenshot, you know what is important, let's say from CAD, you want to show a component into a CAD and you have a lot of components all around, yeah? And you already know what is the focus of the discussion, but the audience doesn't.
Right, and there's it's all distracting stuff all around you, yeah.
Exactly. So by drawing, you are immediately visualizing what matters. And the third point, if you draw properly and you use also whiteboard, you enable people to contribute to the drawing.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
They can stand up. They can stand up and come to the whiteboard and let's say some modification, add something. You know, it's a completely different story. That's the reason why you need when you draw, you need to do it properly. Yeah, so that you enable other people to contribute to the concept.
Say, stand up and say, well, what happens if, and they can draw a variant, maybe from their experience, they saw something different, or what is this point here? What does this mean? Yeah.
Yeah, that's an including strategy, you know, it's not, you are not excluding people. So in communication, when you communicate also, we start from saying, we need to communicate complicated concept. We can provide some examples, we can visualize it. And it's all a matter of including people. So if you just start with complicated, so wording, complicated concept, or you say you make a lot of us, you assume a lot that people, a lot of concept people should know in order to talk with you about the concept, you are excluding them, you know. You're saying you are implicitly saying you cannot talk about this topic, you are not at the same level as I am. So that's where the expert becomes, let's say, not really no nice reputation among the other colleagues, you know. and this is also the point where expert at the end of the meeting they will end the meeting saying, hey, these managers they don't understand anything, you know.
And it's not a good career move.
That's definitely not.
Reminds me of a time I was an engineer in a factory, and a manufacturing engineer, and we were looking, we're always looking for ways to improve the process of making the products we were doing. And we were learning about control charts, and I really got into that. And there's the math is actually pretty simple. And, you know, there's this consideration, that consideration, sampling, this kind of stuff. And the write-up I did of the study we did, and it found that if we change the dye that we use for this extrusion process, we got rid of lumps, which were a defect in our product, from, I think it was 14 per 10,000 foot reel, and it went to one defect on average for a 10,000 foot reel. And then I added, you know, that means, and we sold them in 1,000 foot sections. So if you had 14 defects out of 10,000 feet, it was rare we got something we could sell. And so we're cutting it up into 500 foot and 100 foot stuff. And that costs more time and money to do. And fewer people bought those, that size reels. So I did the business side and said, you know, here's the estimate of how much money this is going to save us on scrap. And my boss thought that was all great and everything else. And then he wanted me to explain that to the senior management, because we're having an engineer's day, and senior management would, like, every 6 months, they come around and kind of pay attention to what we were doing. It was kind of weird. But the report itself was full of the equations and formulas, because it was written for my fellow engineers that were also learning the control chart system. This is what I did. Here's the math of what I did. Here's the setup of this. This is how I knew it was stable. This is, you know, what we did from an engineering point of view. And he just wanted me to put that on slide and present it. And I said, I don't think that'll work. And so he pulled in his boss, who wasn't an engineer, and he tried to explain it to him from my report. And he said, no, don't do that to the general manager. He'll walk out of the room. So I got funded to create I think 4 foot wide, 8 foot long printed control chart of the before and after the change. And it was just a control chart, but it was huge. And it was laid out on the table because all the walls were taken with everybody else's stuff. And it cost, I don't know, a couple hundred dollars to get this thing printed way back when even. And they walked in and looked at it and noticed where it changed. And the general manager immediately said, why did that change occur? Which was the heart of the project. And I said, oh, we did this, this, and this. And he goes, great. How much money did it save? And I had another piece of paper. I put that on the table with the numbers on it and says, this is our estimate for the first 6 months. And he goes, awesome. And, you know, everybody else was trying to do it with formulas and the details and the derivations and all other stuff. And it was dramatic how different the response was from the senior management.
Yeah, I think what you touched two important points. The first one is about financials. So as engineers, especially in this time where cost pressure are immense, we need to always to show that we get our paycheck based on the improvement we do. Now, so that's definitely is I've seen an increasing trend in the company asking for, you know, why are you doing what you are doing, what is the financial impact and so on. Mm-hmm. So a certain ability to think in terms what is the value you are generating, right. That's important. And the second point you mentioned, the discussion with the general manager, is definitely what I mentioned before. So about to show the impact and to have the credibility. You know, that's what I was looking for. So you can do that just if the manager trusts you, or the company trust you. If they start generally what people do is like plausibility check. So in what you're presenting, Yeah. Yep. They will see, for example, some data, they will see some picture, they will check plausibility of what you're presenting. If something is missing and your credibility is impacted, then it doesn't work out in most of the cases, you know. Yeah. So therefore a good way also for presenting to convince people, you know, is how to be credible. Yeah, you need to show the logic, so the logos, but you need also to show to be credible, so the ethos part. Yeah, mm-hmm, there would mm-hmm. be a third part, which is the pathos, which is to show empathy, but that doesn't work for engineers because engineers do not have any empathy. Yeah, yeah.
So and that good works leaders in other good yeah. leaders there. good you know? Yeah, but it, yeah. You have. I think it goes back to the old adage: you got to know your audience. And yeah. I didn't yeah. know it at the time that the general manager's his pet saying, and I learned it later when I was working with him more closely on other projects, was that show me the data. He wanted to see the data. And if it was a database full of stuff, he wanted to see it. He wanted to get a real good sense of where did these numbers come from that you're basing these yeah. calculations on. And so showing him a control chart, you know, with number of defects per reel was what it was easy to interpret in our business what that was. It just hit him right. And that was just by luck that I didn't know that he said, which they always say, show me the data. And control chart's perfect for that. There's the data, you know, here's before and after. Yeah. And so it's part of know your audience. But I like the credibility part is that if you get a question and you really don't know, don't fake it because that can be seen a mile away, is go, let me get back to you on that. Let me dig up those details for you. But yeah. the other time is, you know, I've been working with this and I wrote out the paper basically that says, here's how I use control chart technology to monitor this problem, quantify how big of an issue it was. So I had all that stuff. But it wasn't necessary for a 5-minute presentation showing the value of a project we did. But if you ask me a question about it, right? Oh, I had all that stuff. We could say, oh, we used this kind of chart and this is why, and these were the attributes and this and that. Yeah. And here's the formulas. And, you know, I had the report in the room with me. I could have pulled it out and referenced it. Yet that adds to it, right? Although one time my boss at that same position I was in, we were in one of these, you know, engineering days and we're taking a break. I like those days because when senior management showed up, they always brought food. So it was really fun. Mm-hmm. And so we're taking a break and we're having fun and we're chatting. And my boss yells across the room at me, Fred, and I didn't hear much of anything of what he said. And it was how much was the only phrase I heard. And it was, and I held up my fingers, two fingers, just said two. And he seemed happy with that. And all right, I don't know what the question was, but two seemed to work. Okay. And I found out later that that was 2% yield saving on a project okay. I was working yeah. on.
It was and a good match.
It was a good match. And it happened to be, I think we ended up claiming 1.97.
Yeah.
Okay. Deal. So I thought, okay. Yeah.
Okay.
I guessed right on that one.
Okay. Okay. No, I mean we have touched all or some points so regarding what is communication, so technical communication inside the company. I would like also to hear from the people who are going to listen to this podcast if we are missing something, you know. So there are a lot of important aspects of communication. There are a lot of books. There are a lot of trainings. But what about technical communication? What are the most important, let's say, pillars to master this ability? Yeah, that's a great discussion.
It is, and yeah, there's all kinds of things people have learned over the years. We'd love to hear it. Head over to ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR, and you'll find a couple of ways to get in touch with us. And Enrico and I and the other hosts are available through LinkedIn and our About pages. And, you know, if you've got examples that you can share with us or stories you want to share with us, that would be awesome. We'd love to get those out and shared with the rest of our audience. Or if you got a question, if you got a particular One thing we didn't talk about is, you know, difficult bosses or difficult peers that, you know, want to just undermine whatever you're saying. That might be a subject for another one. But yeah, it's a skill we don't learn as engineers in school.
Yeah, unfortunately, I would say.
Unfortunately. It really, in my opinion, it separates really good engineers. They may be technically very sound, but if they can't communicate it, they're done. And so it's a part of what we do. And I'm you know, and it sparked from a conversation yesterday. I thought, oh, we should dig into that. So thanks for joining me on that conversation.
Thank you very much, Fred. It is always an honor.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, Enrico. I'll talk to you later.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.